Hey, buddy, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theriot. How you doing, Paul?
Hey, pretty good.
Happy 300th anniversary.
What'd you get me?
I got you no show notes today.
Awesome.
We are not going to do show notes, and we're not taking any breaks. No ads, nothing. We're just going to talk about anything. I actually wanted to talk about the Apple event, because we did a show on Monday, we did a show amongst each other on Skype. We were having a whole discussion about the Apple stuff and the interesting changes to that company.
Yeah.
Very interesting changes. I guess we could go into it right now. It was interesting. It was only an hour, which is probably the shortest event that they've had.
By the way, chop off all the recycling baloney at the beginning.
Oh, God.
It was about 28 minutes long.
There was nothing. I mean,
schedule, right? I mean, they usually do WWDC. They usually have an event or two events in the fall. So this is kind of an unusual.
Why do you think they had to do an event now for this phone? The phone and the iPad, I guess. Why now?
Right. Well, I think that those products are responses to things that have happened. One is that the iPad Pro has not taken off in a meaningful way for them. And
the watch.
Well, forget about the watch. I mean, the two big... I mean, as far as, you know, in other words, we're doing something different, right? So 12.9-inch iPad Pro didn't really take off. So, okay, maybe that was too big. Let's see how this one does. Kind of a response. I don't believe they ever planned that this was going to be the next thing. Like, I thought that should this take off, we go forward. This is how we differentiate the product line. And then, of course, the phone, you know, and the phone is interesting because there's so much... we don't know about it. You know, it's like this midstream replacement for a three-year-old design. If they had known back last summer that this kind of product was potentially necessary, I think we would have seen it at the iPhone launch in the fall, you know?
Yeah.
And if you go back to I think it was that event, but it's some event last year, Tim Cook spoke to the upgrade opportunity that Apple had, because people were saying, you know, have we reached peak iPad? iPhone. Have we reached peak iPhone? What do you do? And I don't remember the number, but he provided some kind of a number, and he said there are tens or hundreds of millions of people out there with older iPhones.
About 33% of all iPhone users are using a 4S or a 4.
Okay, but whatever he said at the time, it was some big number, and he said, look, there's an enormous upgrade opportunity for us there. And I think what they thought was that people would naturally move to these bigger phones, which I actually think they really do.
I think they are. See, and I think that's where the mistake is. I don't think people are holding on to their 4Ss because of screen size or their 5s because of screen size.
Okay, but honestly, look, this phone is something that you and I should cheer. And the reason is both of us have complained in the past that the way Apple serves the lower end of the market with the iPhone, with the iPad, and I guess just those two, actually with the Macs as well. You see this with MacBooks, is by keeping older. Jeez Louise. Sorry.
Let's take it.
It's by keeping older products. I don't know why that's so loud in the market after their, you know, past due date. So instead of continuing to do that, instead of continuing to sell older iPhones, they've renewed this machine. You know, they have updated.
It's the old one in a new form factor and new specs.
Yeah, and that's good, right? I mean, here's another way to look at it. But I do think there is an audience out there of tens of millions of people who will buy this phone. Some of them are upgraders from markets like the United States and Western Europe. Some of them are new phone buyers, many of whom will be in emerging markets. There are definitely people who like smaller phones. I think there is a market for it. I don't think it's a huge market. I don't think this is some kind of a game-changing, you know, like this is how we get the iPhone to the next level kind of thing. But I embrace this because that device is a much better thing to sell to people even though they've constrained it in some ways artificially with like 16 gigs of storage on the low-end model, which stinks, in a device that has no expansion. But you can get all the newest stuff in it now, basically, except for that stupid touchscreen thing that is useless anyway.
The 3D so, touch stuff?
Yeah, it's stupid.
Yeah.
So I think this is great. You know, because 2 days ago, or well, 5 days ago, your opportunity in that part of the market, if you wanted iPhone, was to buy a years old design. And now you can buy a new phone with new innards, a slightly, very slightly revised exterior. And that's neat. The other thing, too, I would just point out is $399, that starting price. That's the same starting price as the Nexus 5X.
Yes, but...
with 16 gigs of storage.
Is it 16 or is it 32?
Yeah, 16.
Really? Okay.
Yep. So, no, the Nexus 5X has a bigger screen. Okay. You know, I actually don't think screen size should be associated with cost per se.
I don't like think I, so either, yeah.
I think when you go up on a bigger size screen, you have opportunities in the device to add battery and... you know, have other stuff and make it better for those reasons. But, you know, to me, like, I think it's sort of unfair there isn't a 4.7-inch device in this price range from Apple or whatever. But okay, it's okay. It's still a brand new phone, brand new innards, $400. You know what? Honestly, that's a big step for them. It's something they didn't have to do. And I, you know, I think the natural inclination, mine certainly, is to kind of dump on it a little bit. Because it is that same, you know, iPhone 5C or 5S design.
So do you
ago.
Think, I know that there's multiple categories of people that want this, especially people with tiny hands, but,
sure.
You know, they keep talking about emerging markets. Is this a reality for Apple to be able to enter into emerging markets? It's still not a cheap phone. No. You know, you're still paying $400 for this thing. So is it really an emerging market device or is it just to...
Well, it is an emerging market device, but it's not a...
emerging market price.
No, it's... Look, I don't understand the pricing concerns in every place on Earth, obviously. But in the sense that a mid-range iPhone 6S Plus is an $850 machine, that's an aspirational device for most people in the United States. Most people in the United States would never... walk into an Apple store with $850 in cash
or even
with
a credit card
and just buy that phone. It's aspirational. There's no doubt about it. Because of that, they might buy a lower end iPhone. They might do what people do here a lot, which is just amortize it over 2 years or whatever. And we, you know, there are different plans for that kind of stuff. Emerging markets, I don't know how that works, but what I would say is $400 is an aspirational device, I would imagine, in the Middle East, well, maybe not the Middle East, but in India, in parts of Africa, in parts of South America, parts of Asia, whatever. They probably still do have those down-level opportunities for iPhone 5C. I don't know what they're still selling or, you know, if they still sell the 5S, whatever they do. And maybe they have the opportunity to split the payment for that thing over a period of years, right? I mean, here in the United States, you get one for free.
Yeah.
If you sign up for a new plan, so
you know what though, it's not bad. I looked at some of the pricing, and it wasn't free on Verizon. It was still $17 a month.
Yeah, it's supposed to be free for a 2 year plan.
Yeah.
But Verizon might not. Did they not? Maybe
I don't know because I did. Maybe now they are because day one I went to Apple Site and I did the cost of it, and it was $17 bucks a month. So. I don't know what they're going to... I think AT&T, it's going to be free. Yeah, it's interesting that they put this out. I just think that they are wrong in the sense that people are hanging on... Not for the phone. I agree with you 100% on that. But I think their mentality is wrong with who's going to buy this. If their mentality is... forget about the emerging market stuff. But if their mentality is people are hanging on to their smaller phones and not buying something, I think that's totally wrong. My father, for example, he uses 4S. You know why? He just doesn't give a crap about getting a new phone right now. He doesn't care. He doesn't. Yeah. It's not about the cost. It's not about the price. He like this is what he's using, and he's going to use it until it breaks, and then he's going to buy something. I think the majority of those people are those people.
That could be. I mean, he's not what I would call a good Apple customer, right?
No, he's a very naughty Apple customer.
No, right. I mean, these people need to upgrade every year, preferably every 2 years at the very least.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't at least want every single thing that Apple puts out, you're not really a good Apple customer. You know, like these guys tend to, you know, they always
So you brought something interesting up. You're not a good Apple. Mm-hmm. That's not the normal Apple customer. That's not a good Apple customer. I think that they're falling to that ideology where that belief where our customers upgrade all the time. And if they're not upgrading, it's something we're doing wrong because they always upgrade. My father doesn't care. I could tell you a whole bunch of other people that have iPhone 5s and they have no interest in upgrading and they won't upgrade until their phone breaks. Even though they have the option to go and upgrade every 2 years, a lot of people don't opt in for that. They just want to use it and when it no longer functions, they buy a new one. I think that 30% that they're talking about that hasn't upgraded is that. Yeah. It's those people.
Okay. Yeah, it could be. If we get away from the specifics of this discussion, which is about an iPhone, a lot of people listening to this, and you and I are tech enthusiasts. And so it's kind of hard to think outside of our own head here a little bit because the notion that someone out there might just want to use something forever or, you know, as long as they can is a little foreign to people who just want the next new big thing
absolutely.
all the time. You know, like this is the way this market is. This is conceptually very similar to other debates we could have about life, you know, like the tiny house movement, the real food movement, you know, getting rid of processed foods, these sort of like, it's sort of like an anti-materialism, anti-clutter, you know, whatever you want to say. So, I all we could do is strive to be like that. I think Apple is recognizing that once you get past their core, which are those crazy, gotta have it people, you want to hit the mainstream. And this is maybe a little, I think they're throwing spaghetti at the wall, seeing what sticks. You know, I think the iPad Pro was like that. I think the iPad Mini was like that, absolutely, when they did that. The Apple Watch is a little bit like that. Like, let's see how it goes. So we'll see how it goes. But I think the fear I have for this phone is I like the idea of it. I see no reason not for them not to have it. I think it's a neat thing for them to do. But let's face it. In September or October, whenever they announce the new iPhones, they're not coming out with an iPhone SE 2, right?
Yeah.
Like no one expects that. And if they did, I think that would be great. And I think that would be the right thing to do. But Apple is not going to replace a phone in 6 months. So that tells me either A, this will always be an off schedule replacement cycle thing, like a spring instead of fall, or, and this is the thing I'm really worried about because this is Apple kind of returning to form, they let it sit for 2 years and they don't touch it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
Because do they need to update this phone every year? I don't think they do.
I don't know. In the same sense that reasonable people would say that 32 gigs of storage in a non-expandable device should be the minimum in this day and age.
I agree with you 100%.
Especially if you've ever used iOS.
But you know what's scary about that idea, Paul? You and I both agree on that. I majority of our viewers most likely agree with that. I put a thing on Twitter, which people that follow are enthusiasts. You know, the people that follow me. And and I credited The Verge. The Verge wrote an article saying how Apple screwed up by starting at 16 gigs. And not necessarily for this device. I get it. It's a lower end device in Apple's mind. So fine, 16 gig. But the next generation of iPhones should not have a 16 gig option. 32,
they
64,
should, by the way, the 128. Current shouldn't either. We're a year away from that being okay. But I retweeted something this week, yesterday, I think, from a woman. Oh, I don't even know. Somebody I knew retweeted it and I did it. And then I then proceeded to spend the next 3 hours watching all of my followers just shit all over this woman in ways that I felt like I had to publicly apologize to her for, you know, thinking like I'm doing something nice to this person by retweeting this when in fact all I have done is opened a shit storm for her. Yeah. And I feel really bad about that because people are so terrible. And for some reason, people who are like into Apple, like their concern is Apple makes money and that's good. And it's like, could you see outside of Apple's ass for a second?
Well, this was
and realize
this was
that
the
we're
argument.
Taking a consumer focus view.
This was the argument that I got. I said bravo to The Verge for saying this. You know, because you know, I don't like to say that The Verge is very pro Apple, but The Verge is very pro Apple at times. So they wrote this, and I tweeted, and I said I would love to hear the fanboys defend 16 gigs. And I got the same response. This is for the mainstream user who never installs apps.
By the way, that's bullshit.
Okay.
And but I'm sorry.
Over and over again. Go ahead.
I got to tell you this story. We go to this restaurant, and we know all of the people. We know the owner, the chef. We know all of the waitstaff. We've gone out with them. I mean, we've done, you know, like we know them. We're friends with them. And the, one of the waitresses there, Gina, is a normal person. That's all she is. She is this customer. And she said she vaguely understands that I have something to do with technology. And a couple months ago, she said, "Hey, can I ask you a question about my iPhone? This thing is full, and I can't get it not full.
Yeah.
And I can't figure out how it tells me I need to connect it to iTunes. I don't even know what that means. And I just want my pictures, and I don't understand. I guess you can't expand the memory or something." And that's normal people. And anyone who says this is for mainstream people who don't use a lot of apps or, you know, blah, 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 that's baloney.
Yeah.
Mainstream people, normal people don't know what they need. When you give someone a 16 gig device, you are screwing them over. They just don't understand it. Well, they don't know what they need.
And you're screwing over? You're not screwing over the person that just bought their first iPhone. You're screwing over the person that has had two or three of them. Because I'll give you an example why. Okay. So the argument is, well, the mainstream doesn't install apps. Yeah, but the mainstream still takes photos and videos. Right. Everybody that I know has photos and videos.
That's how she filled it up.
Yeah,
By the way, that's all you got to do. She probably never installed an app. I think she just was out in the world taking pictures of her grandkids and blah, blah, blah. And what is going on here? That's not fair. And the other thing, and what makes it not fair is the upgrade to the next thing is $100. $100.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
For the same phone. I mean,
at Apple's scale, you're telling me that 16 gig per device versus 32 is a material amount of money for the company with the highest ASPs and the highest profit margin, the highest margins on earth? Seriously? And you're going to defend that over the normal people who are getting screwed by this every single day.
Curtis
that
B in our chat.
Makes me crazy.
And I'm trying to follow the chat, but sorry if I missed some of you guys. Sure. Curtis B says, Apple has to do one of two things. A, one, make the base model 32 gigs, or two, increase the free iCloud storage to at least 15 gigs. Agree with them 100%.
Well, okay.
Everybody's maxed out on that free storage of 5 gigs. Nobody's backing up their photos. All the photos are stuck. They can't even upgrade to the latest version of iOS because guess what? There's no storage.
Photo storage should be free. In other words, Apple should say the storage limits are what they are, but if you took the picture with an iPhone, it stays in iCloud forever. It's free and it doesn't kind of
count. What's Google doing with that? I forgot what they're...
It's free. Google Photos is free.
Up to
16 gigabytes probably for a photo or something?
15 gigs,
or 16 megapixels. Something like that. It's free.
Yeah, Amazon, the original. Yeah.
Amazon is free. OneDrive is, you know, it's free for whatever it is, 7 or 15 gigs or whatever they're at these days. It's troubling. But you know what? It's not just about photos. You know, this notion that normal people aren't buying apps or something like that. Well, what's the freaking point of a smartphone is apps. The people who don't install apps, who are people who don't have smartphones,
should be introduced
to this world of apps. Maybe they will want to install apps.
Someone please tell me how big Microsoft Word is for the iPhone. Because I could swear to you it's almost a gig.
It's probably pretty
You know big. What I mean? Like they're big. Yeah, it's big files. Yeah. So you put two of these on this thing. And already, by the way, if you buy a 16 gig, you only have 10 gigs free. Six gigs are taken up by the OS. So you're left with 10 gigs. So... And you'll go through that immediately if you take a lot of photos or take videos. Nobody's backing their stuff up. These people don't know.
This is not something anyone can argue. Unless your main point in life is that Apple makes as much money as possible all the time, regardless of the effect it has on anybody. Yeah. There is no other stance to take on that. The 16 gig thing is no discussion. There is no, unless you're going to let them expand the memory or the storage, that would be fine.
You know, it's amazing. It's actually amazing how things have changed. So our argument is storage needs to become more. 16 gigs is enough. 32 for a lot of people is not enough. You need 64 gigs. On my phone, I got 32.
Change the number every year, but
every year, yeah. But on the PC side, we are willing and we're totally fine with losing storage. We're no longer buying.
We're coming down from terabytes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We're coming down from terabytes into 256 gigs, you know? It's interesting how that...
I mean, you can't buy a core processor-based machine with less than 128 gigs of storage these days, so... I'd give anything to have 128 gigs of storage on a phone as the minimum and then go up from there. That would be incredible.
Yeah.
Look, whatever. The thing is, 16 gigs, you can't claim that's enough for anybody. This thing's supposed to last for 2 years. The types of people who buy this kind of phone, aside from those who literally just love really small screens for some reason, are pretty much on the poor end of the spectrum. There's no other way to say it. And these are the people who, A, are not as sophisticated maybe when it comes to buying smartphones, understanding what the needs are, maybe have never bought one, don't know what they're going to want to do with it yet. And this thing is supposed to last them for 2 years. I can assure you that 2 years from now, that 16 gigabytes is not going to be enough,
no.
Will not have been enough. It's just not right. This is supposed to be a device that lasts for that amount of time. It's okay right now when you get it out of the box before you take a single photo, it's fine. And then after that, you're screwed. I just don't understand that. Anyway, we got really off track there.
No. I think it's a fun conversation. I mean, this is something that I always talk about. And, you know,
it makes me crazy when people can't see past their own sort of, in this case, petty biases. You really got to step back and think for a second beyond your curious need for Apple to be awesome. You know, financially all the time. Like, guys, these people have enough money to last for decades. They're fine. They could lose money for the next 10 years and they'll still be bigger than Microsoft at the end of that. Don't worry about it. You know, I'm not saying they have to start giving money back to their customers, but, you know, they talk and talk and talk about doing the right thing. Well, one of the right things they could do is putting an end to this storage thing. And when they do announce phones this fall that start at 32 gigs, they're going to get a standing ovation.
Yeah.
Instead of people throwing tomatoes at him for not doing it 2 years ago.
I would like to see someone throw a tomato on stage.
Just stand up and be like, boo, boo,
You know, Hellcat says, but the people who buy these phones will be upset in 2 years that because they have no storage left. And then they'll go and they buy the updated one. And guess what they'll buy? 16 gigs again.
Exactly.
That's how it is.
Right.
Because nobody wants to spend that extra $100. I get it. I get it. My wife does the same thing. I finally yelled at her. I was like, what are you doing? I'm like, every time you get this phone... You complain that there's no room, no space, and then you're deleting you're spending like an hour going through stuff to delete. Just get the 32 gig and call it a day.
This is preying
on 64. There's no 32 gig, by the way. It's 64 gig.
Yeah.
Next model.
This is just preying on people who don't know any better.
Yeah.
And that's, at the heart of it is what makes me so crazy about it. Actually, no, what makes me so crazy about it is that's what I just said is obvious. And anyone who defends a company that is preying on the ignorant. It's just like the innocent and the unable to make the right decision for themselves because they don't have all the information. That's sickening to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's bad enough that we have this corporation doing this to people, but then you have people like cheering them on. It's like, ugh, guys, come on.
So I have a
question. Anyway, the rest of the Apple event was okay.
Yeah. What did you, can we talk about this iPad Pro, the small iPad Pro?
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time seeing where this fits and what happens with the iPad Air now. Is the iPad Air done? Like, is the iPad Air just going to stay the way it is and then the Pro is the new iPad?
Yeah, I think so. Because if they showed that device off, in fact, you can go back and listen to the presentation. And if they said iPad Air 3 instead of iPad Pro, if they said we took the iPad Air and we gave it most of the best features of the iPad Pro. We gave it a keyboard, right? We gave it this new kind of screen technology, which is something they would have added to the iPad 3 anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's got the same body. We added 4 speakers. Oh, you know, everyone claps. It sounds like an iPad Air 3.
It does?
Right?
Yeah.
It absolutely does. You know, and then the only difference is when they say, and now it's going to be $100 more, you know, you'd be like, wait, what? Why? Why? Because everything you just described is no more major than any of the other iPad full-size iPad upgrades we've ever been given. Why would the price go up? You know, it's not like there's a pro version of the iOS operating system,
right?
But the screen is something they've been updating on iPads. I mean, this—if you compare this screen to the iPad Air 2, it's just it's like many other screen updates they've given to full size iPads.
Yeah,
it's not a pro feature. It doesn't have any more RAM than an iPad Air 2.
And if you notice the pricing structure, the iPad Air 2, they dropped it by $100, so it's $399, not $499.
Right. Well, which is what they typically do.
Which is what they typically do. But now there's this a $100 gap. There's a $200 gap. $200 gap. So are they going to release an iPad Air 3 to fill that gap, or is this the next leap that you take?
No, this is it. This is it.
Yeah, that's
interesting. And this is the thing. Like, I don't. Whatever market exists for this device, I do believe that most of those people just want the tablet. So what they, in other words, they don't want the keyboard. They're not looking to, we're not typing stuff on a real keyboard. We're not carrying it around like that. I think they just raised the price of the iPad by $100. It's so weird. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
So 9.7 inch, same exact size as the previous one. Is it thinner than the
Air?
It's
the same exact device. It's the, look at the form factor. It's the same. Yeah.
It comes in the rose gold.
That's true.
That is true. It's worth it just for that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're talking about the display. So here's where the difficulty is for me to understand this.
Yeah.
Who is this device for? Right? Like, the whole thing about the iPad Pro was that it was for the creatives, the people that need the more screen real estate. And now this is competing with some sort of Surface device. And it's, you know, you got a keyboard. So now that was the selling point to the big one. What's the selling point to the big one now if you get everything in it in a regular iPad?
Right. Right. Well, I think, you know, Apple saw the market trends for 2-in-1s.
By the way, this is a beautiful tablet. It's a great tablet.
Yeah, no, it looks nice.
Nothing wrong with it. It looks nice, and I'm sure it's hella fast.
Maybe. I don't know. But I think the iPad Air, I'm sorry, the iPad Pro is just too big for most people. And I think, you know, I wrote this editorial before the event, you know, which is basically, why can't Apple just let the iPad be an iPad? Like, they're so busy trying to contort it to different needs they see around the market, when in fact, it's a perfectly wonderful, is the best consumption tablet on the market. It's the best tablet on the market, period. Why do you have to turn it into other things?
By leaps and bounds, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not even like there's a close second.
No, there's no Android tablet that's like kind of as good. Yeah. It's just, there's an iPad, that's it. And, you know, now that they do this 2-in-1 type stuff, you compare it to a Surface or to a PC and it doesn't really measure up. It's not really good at that kind of thing. Now, I do think it will get there, you know, I'm sure it will, but I think it's a few years away, and I think it's something that what they should have been doing is adding features to iOS and keeping the current Air product line going. And people who wanted to couple the thing to a third-party keyboard or an Apple keyboard could do so and kind of cobble this thing together.
Well, now you have the dongle also, that USB 3 dongle.
Well, you know why they have that, right?
Why?
So this is one of the weird features of this device is that it has a USB 2 port. The lightning cable, the lightning port is USB 2.
Oh, it's USB 2, not 3.
But the one on the big Pro is 3. So you can actually chain USB 3 off of it, and it works full speed. It's fine.
Interesting.
But this is what I mean. This is really just an Air. It's just an Air. It's
so
an
wait,
Air 3.
The big iPad Pro, it's USB 3, backwards compatibility. This does not.
Right. Right.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, it has like the newer chip, but it's underclocked. It has half the RAM as the big iPad Pro.
This is an iPad 3. Air 3.
If you put these three machines side by side, Air 2, small Pro, big Pro, and you compare all the specs, it's more like the Air than it is like the Pro.
Interesting.
And the stuff that you can do that's kind of Pro based, you know, the pencil, or the keyboard stuff. You know, obviously it's very easy to add to any iPad. You know, they just did it.
Yeah.
I think this device is basically an Air. And I think when, you know, it's funny, when the iPad is not selling to expectations, right? We know that the iPad sales have essentially been falling now for 2 years straight. Raising the price on the best-selling, you know, product part of the product line is very strange to me. They're ballsy. I give them credit for that.
They got credit for that. And listen, they are, we were talking about this off the air, but we were talking about, you know, like, what's happened to them in the last couple of years? Like, they're making very, very small tweaks here and there, and they're keeping their positioning. I mean, that's, you know, they are, and you brought up something interesting when we were talking. You said, you know, it's almost like Microsoft in 2001, mm-hmm. you know, that era, but
it's exactly like that.
The thing about Microsoft was that they couldn't really do much because of the,
well, they were hobbled by antitrust
lawsuits, and they couldn't, but even if they wanted to, they couldn't expand because they were terrified to make a sound.
I think that Microsoft still would have arrived at where they are today regardless. I think it was just sped up by antitrust.
Right. What do you mean arrived?
That the mobile thing was going to happen without them.
Yeah.
The cloud thing was going to happen without them. That Microsoft would have pushed a Windows-centric strategy in those markets, which, by the way, it did slowly, and that would not have worked. That the things that allowed it to take advantage of Windows in the past no longer applied as we go forward in time.
Yeah,
I think Apple today is Microsoft in 2001, in that they're dominant in the market. They have no real competition. They can do whatever they want.
They got a buttload of money in the bank.
They have a lot of money.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, when you're, everyone's like, oh, we need another iPad, we need another iPhone, you know, that stuff actually can't happen. It's not possible. Apple is too protectionist now, that, because when
and
you're
rightfully
scrapping
so. Your way up, rightfully so.
Right. No, it's natural. I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong. In fact, you know, Microsoft's biggest motivation over the past 15 years was, don't be the next IBM. Don't be the next IBM. We're the next IBM. You know, that's what happens. And you just can't escape it. And by the way, you know, Apple, I guess we'll see what they do. But what you see in these subtle expansions of product lines, you know, slight lowering of pricing, you know, products that are complementary to everything else they do, like Apple Watch, is market maintenance. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And it's fine. And I am literally not criticizing them for this. What else are you going to do? You know, you can't say to shareholders and to your public, look, we're going to take a bath for the next 3 years because we're going to invent the next big thing.
Yeah.
We just don't care about anything else. You can't do that. You're a publicly traded company. I mean, you know, we have expectations as shareholders and part owners of the company.
Or you could be like Samsung and throw everything plus the kitchen sink at your next phone and try. And,
well,
I mean, at every gimmick, everything that you could imagine to try to get people to come over. And I'll tell you something. Yeah. This is the first time that I have bought a phone, which I always buy Android as my, you know, everyday phone. Not because I love Android, because I want to be in every environment. You know, I have Windows Phone that Paul gave me, and I have, you know, I have my iPhone that I use at home. So I'm in all the environments. This is the first time I bought a phone where my wife has said, wow, that phone is really nice. I think I want that one. Because it's different.
Yeah.
You know, it's curved glass. It's a beautiful phone. The camera's great. So they're trying everything to get people. It's a very anti-Apple mentality where Apple is now protecting what they have and the dominance that they have. So it's very two different types of companies at this point.
Yes. Look, we have all kinds of evolutionary upgrades from Apple to look forward to. We've been talking about MacBooks, and we'll see what they do there. I just saw a rumor that there are 13 and 15-inch MacBooks in development.
I saw that. I didn't understand probably the same article, but I don't understand what MacBooks.
I took that to mean bigger versions of that new MacBook, and that those would replace the Air, and that they would offer minimal expansion, similar thin designs, same keyboard and trackpad, bigger screens.
So the Air, to get rid of the Air.
Yeah. In other words, you know, I've been asking for the past several years, I guess, you know, for an actual iPad Air upgrade, meaning Retina screens, you know, and other changes. I mean, I don't understand why MacBooks don't have the Touch ID sensor that's on phones. That's a natural.
MacBooks also have a 640x480 webcam in them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think we'll see that stuff this year. There have been a lot of questions around the Power Mac. and whatever the little trash can thing. That is the Power Mac now. You know, like that, you know, but what about real video cards on the MacBook?
You get them on the well, mine has the Iris, the Intel Iris one, but I think if you got a 15-inch MacBook Pro, you could get a NVIDIA card in it.
Yeah.
The marketplace for them is interesting. You know, when I was in the Apple Store 2 weeks ago, I played around with that MacBook, the gold MacBook or whatever, you know, the regular MacBook. I tell you, it is one of the most stunning pieces of computers I've ever picked up. I mean, the thing is light as a feather. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. Just not practical, like the first Air. The first Air was not a practical device. It was a first-gen device, and it felt like a first-gen device. It was
ludicrous,
slow.
Yeah. Yep.
But
right, so a 13-inch version of that with two USB-C ports.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
But what do you do with the processor at that point? You know, their uphill battle is the form factor of that MacBook requires you to be using that kind of processor because it's fanless, it's super thin, so you're not going to get a lot of power out of it. So how do you take that to the next level with the Air?
Yeah, so, I mean, right. So today's Airs have processors, nice, decent processors. You can get a Core i7 in one of those things. Normally I would go in a completely different direction, but as you were saying that, it sort of occurred to me, this is Apple, and Apple thinks differently, and they really do think differently. And this is what you do. You put Core M7 processors in there, and you say to people, you know what? This product line is designed for people who value portability over gaming, you know, essentially. This is not about that. And that any computer can run Word and Excel and email and browse the web, and that's what people use this device for. If you're a creative, a power user, or a developer, get a Pro. It's in the name. You know, and this kind of brings it. No one. The Air goes away. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's a MacBook. There's 12, 13, and 15-inch screens. The big screens are just for people that like big screens, but it's just about doing email and browsing the web, and it's just, you know, you need a computer. We were just talking about how storage has gone down on computers. Part of the reason for that is we don't really have these huge, heavy applications anymore. A lot of the stuff we do is on the web. A lot of the stuff we do is in lighter weight applications. I think this new MacBook would serve this need very nicely.
I found this in my
own work. I need much less computer than I have.
Yeah, you know? I use virtually no storage anymore. It's crazy. I was actually a little disappointed we didn't get the new Skylake-based MacBooks because I really was hoping to take this one back and just get the new one.
Sure.
You know, might as well. I guarantee it'll be released in like 2 weeks when I can't return it. Just how it happens. Just how it always happens. I mean, it's just how it is. Is there anything on the Windows side that you wanted to bring up today?
On the Windows side?
Yeah. We've done a lot of Mac stuff. Anything interesting happening on the other side?
No, I mean, not along the lines of what Apple is doing. I mean, we have an event next week of our own build, which is very mysterious. Microsoft is declining to share any information about it literally until the day.
Yeah, so every year, we probably this exact week, we talk about things that we're expecting at build and things that, you know, has come out about build. I haven't heard much.
No one has. I mean, there's been, I think they were a little burned. Last year, I kind of had discovered that they were working on Android in Windows stuff. And I had a little dressing down about that on the first day of build privately with some people at Microsoft. And then I think this year, they want not for there to be leaks.
It's interesting.
So
what are you anticipating? Is there anything that you're anticipating? I mean, more universal app stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there are some things we know. We know that they're going to talk about universal apps on Xbox One. We know that they're going to update us on what's going on with the Microsoft Bridges, right, for the competing technologies to get into Windows. We know they're going to talk about Xamarin and that strategy, getting Windows developers into the platforms. But the question is, you know, this is gonna, and HoloLens is going to be all over the place. And,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, I really feel like Microsoft needs to make these apps truly universal, and that they've moved to a point where the client kind of doesn't matter. And they're going to keep making Windows because it makes sense. And Windows is the OS for PCs overwhelmingly. And it should be a great one. And it is. But, you know, Office, OneNote, the email stuff, OneDrive, all that. You know, it should be everywhere. And there's no logical reason for that stuff not to be as good elsewhere as it is on Windows.
Yeah.
And I think what that means is two things. One is a real focus on the cloud. Cloud first, end of sentence. You know, not cloud first, mobile first. Cloud first. Mobile is later. And the other one is that I think universal apps need to be truly universal. I think they need to be cross-platform. I think that it needs to be what Java promised to be, you know, 20 years ago.
I mean, we've been talking about universal apps on, you know, on the Windows side, you know, across all platforms for 3 years now. And yeah. We still have not really seen it come to Xbox in the sense that it's supposed to.
It will.
But what was the reason? I mean, I know a lot of it had to do with, you know, going over to Windows 10 on the Xbox, but mm-hmm. was that still the reason why we haven't really seen much happen? Like, you can't go, Paul at the Rock can't go develop an app for the Xbox still.
The Xbox has always been a very curated environment, just like every other video game console, right? Dating back to Nintendo in the late 1980s. I mean, when you could not release an app on Nintendo or like a cartridge on Nintendo without them being part of the process and releasing it for you, you know, that's the way things have always been. So there's a big shift at Microsoft to make this work. And I know from many people have told me, you know, the Xbox guys are very resistant to this plan.
Because they think it's going to saturate with nonsense.
Well, they've had their walled garden. I mean, they've always had this thing about quality. I remember years ago, literally over a decade ago, when I talked to, I think it was Aaron Greenberg at the time, or someone at Microsoft about the Xbox 360. And you have to really kind of put your head back to the way things were back then. But internet connected console, real high quality bars, as they said. Mm-hmm. There would be no crap release on this console. And we would give them the ability to update the apps, the games, as many times as they needed to get things right when things went wrong. And I was like, well, but doesn't that sort of mean that they could just release something, you know, piece of crap, a game, and then hope they just fix it down the road or whatever? It's like, he's like, no, because we have this system in place that prevents that from happening. And I don't know. Depending on your perspective, they either achieved that or they didn't. But
yeah, I mean, they've always considered a premium platform, right? Like Xbox Live. It was a couple years ago when I forgot who was being interviewed, and they asked, you know, they said, why do you have to pay Xbox Live to get Netflix access, to pay for your Netflix? Right. And they said, well, it's a premium service. We're a premium device.
They stopped doing that, by the way.
Yeah, but, I mean, they kind of had to, right? I mean,
that was a mistake.
It's silly, but
so if you were to go into the App Store on Windows Phone, on an iPhone, or an Android phone, and look for farting apps, you would find hundreds of them. But if you go onto the Xbox Store and look for a farting app, you will find zero of them. And that's the gulf right there between heavily curated and basically not curated, right?
They need to find an in-between, to be honest. That's the reality of it. Yeah. You know, there's so many.
I shouldn't be able to put out Paul's stupid app on the Xbox.
You should.
Without any block between me and the world. But there has to be less of a block. There has to be less of a barrier to entry. It needs to literally be, I have Visual Studio, whatever community, it's free. Yeah. I can put it on my Windows computer. I can publish to Xbox, and then I can send it to them electronically. They make sure it passes certain marks, just like they do in the Windows Store, and then it gets into the store.
Now, have you seen how Amazon does this?
No. Well,
they take a very different approach. So Amazon pretty much taps into their Amazon App Store, right? Because it's Android on the Amazon Fire. But you don't have access to a store. There's no Amazon Fire TV store on the Amazon Fire. The way that you find apps is through the suggested recommended apps in each category. So you could go through it. Or you could search with voice and ask. Yeah. I could say Paul Therott's app. And you probably most likely will never be listed on their front page. But if I know Paul Therott has an app, I can search for it and download the app. I guess that's their approach to keeping it a little bit closed and having quality applications there. So And, you know, I could have some BS fart app that gets 2 million downloads on my Fire TV, and it takes over the store. So now the CBS app and the NBC app are pushed aside because this is the number one app right now in the store. That's how they fight it, I'm assuming. That's how they prevent something like that from happening. I don't know if it's the same. It should be the same approach on the Microsoft side, on the Xbox. But there has to be something that opens this platform up to developers and not just, you know, the big developers that they want to allow to, you know, if Paul wants to make a video game, if Paul wants to make a game, you should have the right to have it on the Xbox, have it on the phone, have it on desktop.
I don't, maybe. I mean, assuming it meets the requirements.
Assuming it meets the requirements, platform,
right? In other words, it has to be safe. It has to, you know, be reliable, whatever the bar is. So we're going to learn about that next week at Build. I have no doubt about it. I that's going to be a big piece of what happens next week is what that's going to look like. And I don't think it's going to be as wide open as the Windows Store, which is, you know, closed compared to the web. But it can't be as controlled as it is today. I just don't think, you know, if you look at the Xbox Store today, I'm sure what you see are high-profile, awesome game titles from Activision. You're not going to see Paul's farting app next to it. Like, they don't make sense to be in the same place.
I totally misheard you and you said the Xbox Store, and I honestly thought you meant the Windows Store. And I was like, what is he talking about? High-quality apps in the Windows Store.
Sure.
He lost his mind.
No.
Is there any kind of information coming as far as new hardware for the Xbox? Because we saw the story with PlayStation that's going to be releasing an updated version of it. Is this changing anything with Microsoft's approach to the cycle for the hardware?
Not that we know of. I mean, Phil Spencer, before PlayStation said anything about upgradable, talked about upgradable hardware. And I think a lot of people misunderstood that. I think what he was really saying was that with Xbox One, they will do something like what they did with Xbox 360, where the big example of that is the Kinect add-on, which kind of changed things for a little while.
Okay.
Or there was actually a firmware upgrade that allowed the device to output a 1080p, where it was only 720p to begin with, you know, that kind of thing. I think that Microsoft made a big mistake with the Xbox One in that it's this giant box that is not in any way expandable or user serviceable. Like, I don't understand why the hard drive isn't this pullout thing that you can replace with your own unit. Put an SSD in there, put a bigger hard drive in there, whatever it might be. That was something the Xbox 360 had. I think that's a huge mistake. So naturally, over time, we are at some point going to see a smaller, lighter, less expensive to make version of the Xbox One console. I hope and sort of believe that we will see an entertainment box of some kind. It is astonishing to me that the performance of a today $299, $350 Xbox One, but a device that originally sold for $500, is not as good as a $100 Roku, a $100 Apple TV.
And it shouldn't be. Yeah,
I mean, it just makes no sense. Yeah. And not to mention the sound, because it's got fans and heat and all the other problems.
It's a very different type of device in its current version, you know, compared to being the set-top box. But, I mean, Sony is essentially doing the same exact thing. They're doing the same approach. It's this big, hunky, you know, piece of hardware.
But the PS4 is a lot smaller than an Xbox One. It is a lot bigger than an Apple TV.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. It's not as loud. The UI is much faster, and that's the big problem.
Than the Xbox.
Oh, yeah, much faster.
But it's a simpler UI. I mean, it's essentially the same UI that you've seen Sony have for the last 7 years.
I agree. Yep, on both coins. So you could say, critically, you could say it's the same UI, which it is. It's also about five times as fast as the Xbox UI, so maybe they're doing something right. And when you're sitting there with a remote going, Netflix, now I want to go to Hulu, that stuff needs to happen like this. And does it not happen like that on an Xbox One. But it does on a PS4, and it does on a Roku.
Let me ask you this question. Do you know much about the PlayStation View?
No.
Okay. I started doing some homework on this device, or on this service, okay? And I was totally misinformed, and I was shocked that I did not know enough about this, about the service. So essentially, it's IPTV. You're paying for cable. Mm-hmm. I thought this was only accessible via a hardware that's provided from Sony or the Xbox. It's not. You can watch this on your Fire TV, your iPad. It's available all across the board.
Really?
And yeah, and it's starting price is like $34, and it goes up to $64. And it's all the channels. It's virtually everything that you need with basic cable.
Really?
I'm
looking at this now. Yeah. That's.
And I'll probably get the message like, "Oh, I thought you cover technology." No, I do, but sometimes you miss things. I'm shocked at well, what the service is.
Listen, I'm only vaguely aware this thing even exists. Yeah. So, and by the way, this thing is localized. For example, it says to me my location is Boston, which it is.
Yeah, so you get local channels. Well, it works on the PS3. It works on the PS4 and Fire TV.
Wow.
So. That's a big step forward. There's a free trial. I'm going to sign up for the free trial.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious. It's 720p only, but if you're like me that only wants, technically I have cable for like two or three channels and I'm paying hundreds, I could get the $34 service from PlayStation to PlayStation View, and I'm more than happy with it. 720p, but who cares? I'm never watching it anyway. Just watching it, it's 3 hours a week or 4 hours a week, whatever I'm doing. It's interesting.
There's actually an iOS app as well.
Why couldn't Microsoft do this?
Yeah, this is the thing. Microsoft has their own media services, which are, kind of on the lackluster side, but there's no good way to access them on anything other than a Windows device, especially the video service. So you can rent all these movies and stuff and buy movies, buy TV shows, but how are you going to watch them out in the living room? What are you going to do? Like connect a laptop with an HDMI cable?
Yeah.
It's a really clunky solution. You could use an Xbox One. Also a really clunky solution, frankly. And that's why I think they need this kind of a box. This servicing is very interesting. This is like an end run around kind of a media center type thing. In other words, forget the wires. You can just do it digitally. I like this. That's.
Yeah. I mean, the only downside, it's only 720. So for, the hardcore enthusiast, that may not be enough. But look at this.
Most people would.
By the way, they're not an advertiser or anything like that. So I'm just.
Obviously, we have no idea what we're talking about. But
hold on,
it looks really interesting.
Let me see if I can do this.
I should look this up on the phone. Let's see if it's.
I'm trying, I hate typing like this. I need a better system here, PlayStation View, so I could pull stuff up. I'm typing, but I'm like a 3-year-old typing on this computer here. There we go. If you look at pricing, where is it?
Yeah, $44 bucks a month for the big one.
A 44 for you. Mine is 54.
Wait, yours says 54. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Leave that up.
Okay.
Leave that up. That's not what this said.
So you're $10 cheaper than me.
I think so. Let me make sure.
The Elite, the Core, and the Access. I know that the pricing depends on your area.
Yeah, those prices are completely different.
Yeah.
Here it's $45 for the big one, $35 for the mid-tier, and $29.99 for the small one.
So you're $10 cheaper.
It's normally even more expensive. If you look, it's a sale.
Oh,
I mean, I don't have the cross out thing. Like it's just the normal price.
Yeah. The prices change per market. So that's interesting. But I mean,
that's amazing.
I don't need 100 channels,
Have to look at what the channels are, right? Like,
let's see the core,
like the core.
Let's see the access. So here's the lowest one. So you got ABC, CBS, Fox, MyTV, NBC, Telemundo, basic stuff. You got USA Sci-Fi, Spike, Pop TV,
The problem
TV
is
Land.
It's really hard to see what the difference is because they're alphabetical.
Yeah.
So you'd have to kind of compare them side by side to see what you're missing out on. But, I mean, I look at the...
I think you got more sports with the Elite.
Mm-hmm.
And you got TNT, the Turner
definitely
Station.
Have more, yeah, there's yeah. more...
It's interesting. Huh. I mean, it's not a... I'm going to try them out. There's a free trial. It's a 7-day trial. I'm going to try it out to see if this is even something that I could, you know, use.
What would this be like if you traveled? Like, if I was in San Francisco next week and I opened my iPad, would I still get my Boston channels from there?
That's a very good question. So somebody said there's like a way it works with the iPad. It doesn't necessarily work the way that we think it does. So I don't know what that means.
Okay.
But if you could pretty much bring your Roku and your Fire TV and do it. I know that they're going to be adding more devices. But I think it's interesting that you could get it on the Fire TV and it's not just for PlayStation people.
Okay. So, yeah, PlayStation View Mobile on iOS lets you stream select channels outside the home or stream directly to your TV via Google Chromecast.
Okay.
So it's not all the channels. I think it's the
not
basic.
All the channels. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe it's a local TV thing, what might be the logical thing you would miss out on, I guess.
Yeah, and you got Showtime.
That's really interesting.
But not HBO, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, HBO has their own subscription service.
Very interesting stuff. I thought I would bring that up because I was going to forget it.
I've sort of heard the term, like, I was aware there was something called PlayStation View. I want to say Vue for some reason.
The PlayStation Vue.
Vue. That's what they call it in France. Anyway, yeah, it's not what I thought it was. So
no, me either. I thought this thing required their own device that you connected and the whole thing.
So So it looks like if you use it on Fire TV, you get the full lineup.
You get the full lineup on Fire TV.
I think so. So you cannot. Wow, that's very interesting. That's an interesting cable cutting idea.
You know what I'm going to ask? I'm going to ask Tom Merritt because he probably knows more about the service and how good it is. He is a cord cutter. He does a show for cord cutting. So I'm going to ask him. Send him a little ping because I wanted to give the dude a free trial of this. Because I don't, you know, the other thing is like going back from cable to TV. Like if I just have everything on one device, I'm fine. That's more than enough for me.
Yeah.
But it's IPTV, so it could look like shit and, you know, you're stuck.
Yeah. Well, it could, but it could look great too. I'm very curious. Very curious to see what this looks like. Yeah. I might try this too.
Guys, we are out of time. We got to wrap up. Go to our website, gfknetwork.com. All things Paul, go to therot.com. If you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to do our bonus show. It's exclusive on Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech. If you want to get access to it, go there, check it out. Paul's, you're going to be at Build next week. What day are you going to build?
Tuesday.
So no show next Tuesday.
Right. Yes. That's
and then when are you coming back?
Saturday.
Okay. So what are our options for next week?
Yep. I don't know. Okay. We might want to not do a show next week. Okay. I think it might make the most sense, given that we're doing this one late in the week.
Okay. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. All right, guys. That's it for this week. Take care.